I, Peter Street, am gay. About Joseph Campbell.
You're listening to Blue Yonder with your hosts, Jim Jones.
Never get fucked. Never surrender.
Peter Street.
No, Galaxy Quest, you asshole.
And introducing Aaron Hubbard.
By the hammer of Grapthar.
Today we're going to be talking about a subject that's near and dear to my heart, and it's something that has flamed GeekKind almost from the very beginning of the two franchises coexisting in space. And that topic is Star Wars versus Star Trek. Or perhaps Star Trek versus Star Wars, depending on where your loyalties fall. This debate has been raging on BBSs, college campuses, the internet, ever since the technology was formed. And we're going to discuss it tonight, and it basically in two different areas. Basically, there's two types of arguments. One that's based on technology or military prowess, which is basically who would kick whose ass if the two canon franchises would meet at the same space and time. The other arguments lie about the actual quality of the material. What is better in a subjective, you know, kind of literature or theatrical sense, you know, which is better made, which is the better story, which is the better characters, which do you like more? So I'm actually going to talk about I've got strong opinions. I'm actually a veteran of the Star Trek versus Star Wars wars. That wasn't an echo.
Star Wars.
And I got strong opinions. I'm actually one of the few that likes and respects both material. But I've come to the conclusion after careful study that should a rumble go down in a Star Wars or Star Trek neighborhood, that Star Wars would be coming out on top. I was going to say, just before we get into the details, I just kind of want to know where you guys, you sons of bitches, are lying, so I know where to have my blasters pointed.
Your blasters? Don't you mean your phasers?
No, I mean my fucking blaster rifle, buddy.
Oh, hold on just a second. Hold on just a second. What do you mean you want to know where we stand?
I want to know...
Like, what do you mean where we stand?
Before we go to the second branch of argument, I want to know, again, if Star Wars and Star Trek threw down, who's going to come out on top?
If the universes battled each other, I mean, we can look in the Hubble telescope and see that happen all the time.
Sure, sure.
But I think what you're talking about is... Probably you're talking about, Aaron, if the military might clashed, or are you wanting to include the storytelling?
Yeah, and usually the way they break it down in the different debating groups is the standard is basically Federation versus Empire.
Okay.
Obviously, the Rebellion probably wouldn't go to war against the Federation.
Yep. Yeah.
But a lot of times... the scale gets expanded.
So you're talking about Star Trek vehicles versus
Star Destroyer versus Galaxy Class Starship. Luke Skywalker versus William Riker.
Jar Jar versus Picard.
Ever since I first heard about this debate, and I think, to be honest now, you said it rages across college campuses, I think all the raging between this topic has severely lessened after the lobotomy that was 1999 episode 1. Because nobody really... Like, I used to be kind of passionate about this debate before 1999. After that, I don't give a shit if Star Wars gets killed by the original Enterprise.
Well, I will say, because I actually was participating in the battles during this particular time, and I'll say two things killed the debate in. Although it's coming back a little bit and at certain pockets on the internet. Two things. The fact that Star Trek quality had sunk so low. We're talking about Phantom Menace came out around the time that Voyager was in its full string. So you're talking about basically two shit pies to both fans. And it takes it takes passionate fans to sustain this argument. But both creators basically hoard up the series simultaneously. And we were waiting, because for Star Wars, we had no new canon information for the longest time. I mean, you have books, but books are so contradictory, and they're hard to use for evidence as far as you know, these kind of nerd debates. And Star Trek has put out new material, but, you know, again, it's not like this Federation came out with some super weapon that they've never had before. I disagree 100% with that.
I think Star Trek does have a super weapon that Star Wars cannot defeat.
And that would be...
And that, my friend, would be the transporters.
Why would the transporters be... I've heard this argument before. I just want to know what form it's going to take.
It's going to take the form of... Let's see. There's a Jedi on this planet. We're about to pick him out because we can tell that he has midichlorian counts higher than normal.
Okay.
And we are going to transport him into the center of the sun, or... Wherever, or just transport him into nothing.
So what do you do?
Transport him up, keep him in our computers, and never rematerialize him.
What do you do about the, you know, thousands of Star Destroyers that are surrounding your position, beating the shit out of your ship at the time you're trying to, you know, beam this Jedi, this one lone warrior out?
You don't beam out the lone warrior. You beam out the guys firing the weapons. You beam out everyone.
Okay, so true or false, transporter technology works through shields? I mean, Star Destroyers are definitely shielded. We saw that definite proof in Return of the Jedi when the shields fell down and an A-Wing was able to steer through a window of a Star Destroyer.
What type of shields, though? I mean, it really depends on can
Well, Star Wars has, of course, ray shielding, which would, you know, shield from ray-like particles, including phasers and whatnot, presumably electromagnetic energy. And they have particle shielding, which actually is kind of a form of... What Star Wars would call deflector shield. Star Trek would call deflector shield.
I have not read any of the technical manuals to know for sure, but I do know that in the Star Trek universe, you cannot beam when a ship is shielded. Ship-to-ship beaming, anyway. And in Star Wars, ships have shields. It talks about that, and if the shields were up, then that would nullify that potentially lethal advantage. Just like in Star Trek, you don't have ship battles ending with the captain of the Klingon ship being beamed into the sun.
What the hell? This happens to us all the time!
To be or not to... Oh, shit, I'm in the sun! You know,
I'm in the middle of the sun!
Give me a Romulan ale!
What's the largest thing that can be transported?
Probably my
ships,
penis.
Do you think?
I think a whale. The two whales and this, all the water that whales need have been demonstrably beamed
up. Yeah, whale.
Was that the limit?
Well, no. I mean, I'd say a outmoded Klingon warship was able to do that. So I presumably larger transporters could transport larger things.
Where are you going with this?
I'm like, are you going to tow Starbase 74 around if I'm, like, beam Star Destroyers one at a time into the sun?
Exactly. Like, I'm wondering if you can beam entire ships into the sun, although I realize Star Shields Destroyers are massive.
I don't think so.
Yeah. They're, in fact, they're exactly 1 mile long.
Yeah, they're enormous. And that doesn't even count the Super Star Destroyer.
I've always been very much on the side in this debate back before George Lucas tore my heart out in 1999. Back before that, I was always definitely behind Star Wars totally destroying the Federation. The Empire in Star Wars, you know, they've got Death Stars, they've got Super Star Destroyers coming out their ass, they've got, you know, all this hardware. And you've got maybe 20 ships around Mars? Come on.
See,
Star Wars is
going to
blow them away.
We've seen demonstrably that the Empire can be defeated. The Rebels did it.
Yeah, with the same technology. Get out of town.
So if we're talking about all the resources available to the Federation, well, diplomacy is one of their resources. So they could conceivably team up with the Rebels, and Luke could go in, shoot down the Death Star, and everything could happen as it happened before.
And my argument of that is basically you're saying that the only way that the Federation could win against the Empire would be to aid and abet the Empire's number one technologically parity enemy.
Yeah.
And again, like the Rebels, the Federation at this point would be basically like, you know, producing bullets and boots for the Rebels, because Just to what I believe here, as far as technologically, speed-wise, it's shown time and time again that even powerful races like the Borg take years to get across their galaxy, because it was, you know, 5 years or so after they discovered humanity existed, after Q fucked around with them, that they actually made their first appearance in Federation space. And the Federation takes weeks to travel across their actually claimed space, and that's a teeny tiny part of our galaxy. Where in Star Wars, it's shown that you can get from the core to the outer rim in the space of about a day. Darth Maul made that trip. And Phantom Menace, and we see,
hyperspace travel.
Hyperspace,
they basically tear wormholes into their space.
And so hyperspace is demonstrably much faster than even the fastest known warp drive technology.
Yeah,
so the strategic speed of the Star Wars galaxy is just immense. For the economy, you've got basically an entire galaxy, save the outer rim, largely unpatrolled features, that is harnessed to produce literally millions of Star Destroyers. And a single Death Star that the interior volume, as far as the construction capacity, is just amazing. I mean, you're talking about a structure that's like 191 miles in diameter, the first one. Versus the Federation, where basically their entire fleet at Wolf
359.
I mean, they had like 74 ships. So it's like they're talking about a huge fleet for Star Trek terms would be 100 ships. And that's like a backwater border patrol sector in Star Wars. So it's like the economy and how much numerical superiority, again, the Imperials have a huge advantage. Firepower.
Honestly, they do.
Firepower, according to sources in Star Trek, a single Star Destroyer can completely turn an entire planet's surface to glass. Nothing like that exists in Star Trek. I mean, they showed, I think there's a fleet of like 23 Romulan starships and Cardassian starships that tried to effectively, destroy all life on a single planet, and they couldn't, that was when they attacked the fake Dominion planet.
What about the Genesis device?
Well, Genesis device, again, somehow, generates life on the planet. And it looks like it destroys
all other life.
It does look like it destroys all my, but I'm talking about just in firepower terms, I don't think that's going to be useful in getting past the planetary shield. Whereas Death Star, so it's like you can hit Genesis for torpedoes, they aren't going nowhere, because our whole planet's, any planet of value in Star Wars universe has a planetary shield.
Yeah.
Whereas a Star Destroyer.
Even Hoth had a partial one.
Yeah, a theater shield.
That's why they had to land like hundreds and hundreds of miles away.
The other thing about this is they may have shields. How does the new Star Trek movie actually come into this? Because with the red matter and the drills and all this future technology that the Romulans had,
to do what they did in J.J. Abrams' film, you would obviously have to penetrate a planetary shield.
And does the drill do that? I mean, was there a planetary shield around Vulcan?
In my time, this is just an ordinary mining vessel. He says that in the film. And the fact of the matter is that that's all it was. It had no shield penetration capacity.
I think that it could be devastated on an unshielded planet, but the reason I argue that shielding would render it ineffective is the fact that they stored red matter in a giant electromagnetic field. Similar to warp containment. So,
sure.
But again, the firepower, and then you look at the Death Star that obliterated like a fully shielded planet. And if you go to StarDestroyer.net, there's actually a really good Imperial archive of the kind of Star Wars arguments, or the war argument for Star Wars from the Star Wars perspective. And this guy is a physicist, and Curtis Saxton, that actually did some of the Incredible Cross-Section Star Wars books. He's an astrophysicist. He did calculations on his site, basically that the energy that the Death Star output during the Alderaan blast and disregarding what it would take to penetrate a shielded planet, because who knows what that is. But they're basically saying to accelerate the matter into the explosion that we saw would take a 1 to the 39th power, watts worth of power. And so that's 1 with 39 zeros after it. The energy that's released on that is something like, on something like what the sun puts out in a year's time. So the firepower that the Empire uses is truly staggering. And, you know, again, those are the three cornerstones of why I've always assumed that Star Wars would whoop Star Trek's ass, because speed, economy, and firepower, they hold all the advantages. And there are some technical gimmicks and tricks that Star Trek people can say, like, well, we've got cloaking devices, and we've got transporters, and we've got, like, you know, red matter, Genesis torpedoes, but none of those are true, you know, military type advantage.
Kind of like guerrilla tactics against the Empire, though.
Yeah.
Well, kinda, I mean, like, that's street what fighting. Defeated the Empire in the first place, is guerrilla tactics.
That's true, but they were...
But on the other hand...
That is true, I mean...
But guerrilla tactics, imagine, like, a primitive Stone Age race using guerrilla tactics against the U.S. Army of today.
Sure.
I mean,
sure.
They can use all the Ewoks. Yeah.
The Ewoks kick the Empire's ass once again.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, it's been shown time and time again that the Empire's strategies are severely lacking when it comes to fighting guerrilla warfare.
Yeah,
I guess that's true.
They get their ass handed to them.
The only thing I can say about that is that what can I say? Good always triumphs over evil.
I mean,
that's true.
Well,
Federation is good.
That's getting more into the themes of it. That's more the mythology of it and what it's trying to say.
Sure, sure.
But I mean, it is true. I mean, if you have, it's just like in the first Star Wars movie in Episode 4, when all the fighters could actually approach the thing, because they had prepared for much larger combat. So you have these little small things that get through and actually cause tremendous damage. I think guerrilla tactics
is a powerful
tool.
On the other hand, the Star Wars apologist in me wants to point out that had it not be for the son of the Chosen One, the rebels still would have been fucked that day.
That's true. It did take out the Emperor.
It's not. Well, not only that, but on the original Death Star too.
Yes. Yeah.
If it hadn't been Luke using the Force, they'd have been fucked. So
no, that was just his practice bullseyeing womp rats.
But no, he used the fucking Force.
There was no Force there.
I'm just saying that since they're, you know.
He heard that voice, use the Force, Luke, and he was like, fuck that, I've been bullseyeing womp rats, bitch.
Yeah, unless, like I said, unless there's a self-taught Jedi Knight in the Federation, I don't think they're going to have as good a luck.
Well, so here's another thing as far as tactics go, and maybe a little bit in the firepower section as well. You were talking about how the Federation would essentially just be manufacturing boots and bullet casings. Mm-hmm. But what if they were to outfit, like, let's say, a Mon Calamari cruiser with transporters and red matter and cloaking devices, and, I mean, all these different technologies that Star Trek has that Star Wars doesn't.
And they name it the USS Red Herring.
It's a trap!
That's right. Akbar would still run away like a pussy. Unless Lando was there to talk his ass off the ledge.
Not true. I mean, if Akbar's sitting there cloaked in the middle of space and they have no idea he's
there.
He
would still shit his pants, say it's a trap, and want to boogie out.
Okay, we're taking Akbar out.
And Lando would be like,
we're putting Picard in command.
Imagine Wedge Antilles with some red matter in his X-Wing flying in the middle of the fucker. That would be... Can you imagine? Instead of a Death Star exploding ring that they have to edit in 20 years later, it would actually be the opposite. That'd be kind of cool. But they'd still probably have a ring of fire come out from it. They'd have to have that.
And suck the explosion in.
Yes.
That would be cool.
I think red matter is devastating, but I also think that was pulled out of J.J. Abrams' ass.
I agree. It's this mysterious red matter. He doesn't explain it. He doesn't do anything.
And what a dumb name
what
for something that creates and generates black holes. Calling it red matter.
It's almost better than some like ridiculous gibberish to explain it technically.
I'd rather have the techno babble. We got into this on our first episode about how geekdom is kind of watered down a little bit, and that's just another example. Whereas at least they went to the trouble of of quoting some very heavy technical, bullshit technical jargon, but they went to that that extra trouble to make it sound sort of legitimate. Back in, like, Next Generation, now they just say, we'll call it Red Rainbow Matter. You know,
Reading Rainbow Matter, absolutely. LeVar Burton's got that in stockpiles.
That's right.
Reading Rainbow Matter.
That's what Geordi's visor's powered on.
There's a black hole to my childhood. Anyway.
So what about
the technical aspects? Let's go on to something.
Wait. What about the proposition of outfitting Star Wars technology or Star Trek technology onto Star Wars hardware?
I don't even think you need Star Wars hardware. If you've got a cloaking device and red matter, I think you've got a shot.
And transporters?
So you can have a cloaked ship able to transport, like, all the personnel of the Death Star into deep space, and you can have
Wait a fucking second. Starship can't beam off 100,000 or however, million
crew. You can do it one at a time.
Maybe you
one
can do it as a fleet.
I just can't imagine that the Empire is going to, that you're going to be able to beam everybody off the Death Star one at a time. Because, again, the Death Star is shielded.
Sure, but the original
one... The Death Star is shielded, but I think Jim's about to say, the original Death Star was not. And the second Death Star wasn't either.
Okay,
shielded while it was within range of the planetary shield. That fucker was so huge they couldn't afford... They couldn't the power to shield it at all times through deep space. So as soon as that fucker's away from the planetary shield... It is ready to be exploited with the cloak beam.
Here's the deal.
I know what Aaron's going to come back with. He's going to say that the Death Star is not the only ship in their fleet.
No, not even that. This is what's so funny, because this is such an awesome example of why the Star Wars people is whooped ass on the Star Trek people, because right about now, one of the legends like Michael Wong or Keynes or Wayne Poe would jump in here and say, okay, dumbasses, here's what would happen. They would start saying, you know, we've lost a dozen crewmen in the last hour due to some mysterious transporter effect from the enemy. And the Death Star commander would be, oh, okay, we'll set course to planet Earth. Hyperwarp there, left the cloak ship in the dust. Boom, blow up Earth. That was fun. Let's set course to Vulcan. Boo. I mean, they literally are moving
a million times
faster than the Treks, and they have firepower that will completely destroy all their planets. So it's like, game over.
Why do you need planets? What does God need with a planet? if you're the Federation and your only concern is defeating the Empire, what do you need planets if you have
But I'm saying, like,
you need planets to support the war effort. I mean,
well, that's true. Not why. The starships are essentially bases within themselves.
So you're saying victory for the Federation is for this one lone starship to tirelessly chase after the Death Star
until the heat death of the universe. No, we're not talking about one starship. We're talking about a fleet.
So you're saying that the Empire sits there and says, okay, we're going to let you guys have our technology for a period of time long enough to study it, interface it with your ships. We'll bide our time and ignore this happening. And then when you say you're ready to go, we'll go to war. And you'll have all your ships equipped like this.
No, that's not what I'm saying. How are you going to stop a cloaked ship?
I don't have to.
Well, this is what I'm saying. I guess this is where I'm coming from. If you were the tactician in the Star Trek universe, what you would do is this. You would assemble a massive fucking fleet, so the scenario Aaron is representing never happens. You don't have any of this nonsense where there are 15 mysterious crewmen that are not reporting for duty every 5 hours, you know?
And
it's like, TK-421, why aren't you at your post? TK-421, he's been beamed into space. You know, you don't have that, no. No.
Or like the
Nothing
captain sitting
like
there
it.
And his boots are suddenly gone.
Yeah.
They're not beaming off people's boots one at a time.
I said fire when ready. Why is no one listening to me? No.
My God, they got my underwear. Come on, fire already.
My foul stench is now not on board. No, what I'm saying is you have a legion of cloaked starships. I'm talking all the cloaked starships you can find. And
so you got like 100 of them?
Yeah.
Because we've already established that the fleets are puny.
Let's say we've got 100 starships cloaked, and they are surrounding the base where they're constructing the second Death Star at Hoth. We'll say for a second the shield is not yet finished, and we have all the ships around the second Death Star actually targeting each and every member of the crew until they're all locked in place, ready to jettison them into space or the sun or wherever you want. And then they all do it. Bam! The entire structure is devoid of life forms.
We're not even talking beaming everyone off. We're talking beaming off the chain of command.
How in the hell would they know what that is and where they're at? And again, how many people do you think they can simultaneously beam off in one go? And again, the Death Star is shielded.
One ship can beam up hundreds of people.
The Death Star is shielded.
Not the original one.
It wasn't part. No. Time out. The shaft was ray shielded only. It was not particle shielded.
I hope you're just remembering that when you're having your sex exploits.
I totally do. Just the thermal exhaust port, because obviously to let the exhaust out, they have to unparticle shield. So it was only shielded against electromagnetic energy, which, as far as we know, a transporter beam is.
Okay, well then let's beam in some red matter. Game over.
You can't beam through shields. This is so. I think, man, this. I can't. You know what? If we get some forums going, this will be a rollicking time because.
Why could you not line up the perfect shot with a cloaked ship on the exhaust port? None of this manual flying through the trenches.
Well, they were supposed to have shielding in the exhaust port on the second Death Star, right?
But they'd have been
finished.
Sure,
but then you go to the planet and you take out the shields there, just like they did in the movie.
Yeah, that's
again.
True.
You're telling
so
me
you're basically saying that a Federation starship could maneuver down? Are you going to like cloak a shuttlecraft?
No, you're let's say you get the Defiant in there. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Defiant is easily cloakable.
Yeah,
and it can go right up to the exhaust port and just fire straight into it.
It wouldn't fit in that trench.
It doesn't have to fit in the trench.
Right.
Why would it have to fit in the trench? It could sit outside cloaked a foot from the ship.
Besides, there's like the other thing you guys are forgetting.
And one of the things that I have to interject here is the fact that in J.J. Abrams' Star Trek movie, the whole idea about red matter and it needing to be by the villain of the film drilled into the core of said planet that's about to be destroyed is entirely unnecessary. If you have a black hole anywhere, even in the star system, talking about a substantial
size,
it does depend on the size. I understand that. Yeah. I understand it needs more matter to feed and to get larger. But I'm saying this. I mean, what if you put the black hole by the sun, and then you have it destroy destroy the sun of the system?
Yeah, I agree. It doesn't make sense, but all we know is on screen, it's a demonstrable fact that you have to burrow through the planet's core before this weapon is effective. So, I mean,
yeah, I guess that's what's on screen.
Is,
but it just seems like a black hole
no real lore to
wouldn't
say
need to be in the middle of a planet in order to be lethal.
Right, and as from a Star Wars perspective, we're like, why is the Death Star sitting still, letting the Federation abuse it thus? Why wouldn't they actually be going to planets and destroying the planets?
Well, I mean, you have to ask the same question.
Why the hell didn't they do that when
the
Rebels attacked?
Why did the Rebels, get to destroy it? They destroyed it the same way. Because tactics and timeline do you have to take that into account. The Death Star is not always going to be at its capacity to warp and jump everywhere and destroy the universe. I mean, it has to be constructed. So I guess part of whether or not Star Trek beats Star Wars has to include when they encounter each other. Because this whole red matter is new, too. I mean, red matter was not classic Trek. It wasn't even Next Generation. Red matter is something relatively new in the Trek timeline, as far as a weapon.
Even assuming that they have don't have the Death Star and the red matter works, you're still talking about Imperial Star Destroyers that can move a million times faster than the fastest starship, moving planet to planet and conducting base Delta Zero operations and completely turning all habitable surfaces of a planet to glass.
Okay, well, we've also seen that ships can, in fact, get into the shield barrier. Is that correct? Because Han Solo did it in the Millennium Falcon?
Well, so did Luke, but they also, I think...
How is this?
That it looks like Star...
When he was hiding on the surface of that Star Destroyer.
Hmm.
And the Millennium Falcon, he was pressed up against the ship. Now, he was inside, I assume, the bubble of the shield, correct?
Well, I think...
Because if that's the case, you can get inside with a cloaked ship and then just transport the crew off.
Wait, you guys have lost me. When was anything penetrating the shield?
Well, we're talking about when the Han did his famous gambit where he clamped onto the backside of the bridge of that Star Destroyer and let fly with the garbage. I'd have two arguments, that perhaps the shields actually completely hug the hull surface, and number two, we've actually seen the Star Wars shields seem to have the particle shielding, at least, the mass shielding, matter shielding, has a weakness that it can be penetrated by a smaller, slower-moving object, like Gungans can force their way through, battle droids can force their way through to penetrable.
That's actually a valid point.
That could just be how the Gungan shields in particular are constructed.
No, but I'm saying like that could be the case where Han actually warped past, you know, did a dead stop and then slowly descended within, you know, feet of the ship until he slowly penetrated that shield and adhered to the hull. Or the shield just conforms through the hull.
Sure.
I mean, it doesn't necessarily have to be a bubble shield in the vein of Star Wars or Star Trek.
No, it doesn't. But, I mean, okay, well, let's go with Star Destroyers have to vent their garbage, apparently. Right. Correct?
All right, so they'd have to drop a shield.
To do
that
they would have to either drop a shield completely or at least punch a hole in it. And then, at that point, I'm assuming you could beam people off the ship through that hole.
Yeah, but again, it's like, are they dropping particle shields or ray shields? And the other thing I want to point out is that every ultimate cloaking device has been proven in Star Trek to have a weakness to where you can track it, and you're telling me that it's a civilization that is literally thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of years more advanced, doesn't have the technology to detect the primitive cloaking devices of the time? I mean, by the Heir to the Empire trilogy, the Empire had access to cloaking technology that was literally worked so well that the ships inside the cloak were totally blind, which, if you think about it, is the only logical way a cloaking device can work. That whatever radiation it's tuned to cloak, that light, it's completely transparent. So, by definition, if you're using any kind of sensor to detect it, the cloaking device is impaired.
Well, that's not entirely true. Because you can shield different frequencies.
Right, but I'm saying that in the Star Trek universe, or Star Wars universe, that apparently is worthless. Because their cloak is a true cloak. And it's the only way that they're rendered indetectable.
Okay, does the Empire have any of this technology? I mean, we're going to come back to, you can't...
They do have cloaking device technology as of the Heir to the Empire trilogy.
Do they have it outfitted with any of their ships?
I mean, they, like, Thrawn slapped it onto a couple of... here's the other thing. In Empire Strikes Back... They actually mention surprise that the Millennium Falcon would be equipped with a cloaking device.
Yeah, that's true.
So it's like, they do have cloaking technology, and again, their cloaks are absolute, where the ship inside's blind, the ship outside cannot be seen, so it's like, I think unless the Federation has that level of technology, which they don't, that this Empire is just gonna be like, we can fucking see you guys. It'd be like going to war with a person attacking you at night, and you get night vision goggles. It's like, this isn't really a tactical advantage, fucker. Rat-a-tat-tat.
It's suspicious to me that it's never actually demonstrated within the movies. Like, you have mention of it, like you said, with the Millennium Falcon.
And supposedly Darth Maul's ship is equipped with a cloaking device, according to the Visual Dictionary, but that's not exactly...
Yeah, why did they never show any cloaking devices in use? I don't understand that.
I think that my theory would be that because... cloaking is seen as like a strategic parlor device.
All this debate is
really
fine
work.
And good, but I think you guys are all forgetting the most powerful weapon in either the Star Wars or Star Trek universe that you haven't even mentioned yet.
What's that?
The pen of the writer of the story.
Well, see, now we're getting into the quality argument.
Let's not go there just quite yet. We've got some other stuff to
talk
about.
This doesn't necessarily talk about the quality. I'm just saying that I think we've both put up an argument that's so reasonable that you could actually logically write a story where the Empire loses, and I think you could logically write a story where the Empire dominates.
True, and I actually think there's lots of fan fiction out there that do just that to various degrees of success.
I think there's enough to go both ways, honestly.
I actually think Michael Wong wrote one of the best examples in Conquest of showing how the Empire is stronger, but ultimately the Fed, what naturally happened was a Fed rebellion alliance. And they won the day.
Yeah, I think that seems most likely.
I mean, if they encounter
each other, they're probably going to make friends with the alliance.
Right.
And I read that back in 2000. Excellent story.
So, guys, if you want to Google that up, Michael Wong's Conquest.
Conquest.
It's probably the definitive piece of literature. I think Chuck Sonnenberg has actually written this massive, excellent quality work where he does it. But honestly, if you like Conquest, look up Chuck's works as well. His I can't even remember. It's like a six-part. It's just a massive work, and it'd be like a stack of encyclopedias if you actually printed it out and read it. So it's a lot to slog through, is what I'm saying. All excellent.
But
yeah. Yeah, read Mike Wong's book first. If you like it, it's like probably 175 pages.
It's a pretty quick read. I read it on a plane, actually, as I was heading towards San Francisco in 2000, right when San Francisco was, well, I don't want to spoil anything.
Blown to hell by red matter? Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. That's
the damnedest thing, driving across the fucking San Francisco Bridge and the Golden Gate Bridge, and this pillar of fire came from the sky.
Conclusive proof that you don't have to have it in the center of the planet.
At the end of the day, I've always been in the camp that if it was a straight war of firepower, head-to-head, the Empire's going to win. Now, if it's guerrilla tactics, you know, who knows what's going to happen, because it's kind of chaotic. That kind of warfare is fucking chaotic. You can't really control it.
And it's kind of a weakness of the Empire.
And it's sort of a weakness of the Empire. And, I mean, you can say the Rebels have the ships that are similar technology as the Empire, and that's fine, but they don't have the little neat tricks that the Federation has. They don't have the cloaking devices, they don't have the beaming technology. All that would have become very vital little tricks for the, and huge tricks, not just little tricks. I mean, we're talking about a big deal tactically for the Alliance to have.
What will be interesting is I would love to see some listener feedback, because we've not even touched on, like, time travel, Species 8472, the Borg. You know, there's a lot more than just a Federation in the, you know, Alpha, Beta, Gamma, Delta Quadrant in the Milky Way that Star Wars would have to rumble with. And each one
the
of them...
The other thing we haven't touched on is Captain Kirk's fists.
Captain Kirk's fists?
Yeah, I mean, fists of fury, man.
Fist of ham?
He defeated a Gorn, heads up.
With a homemade bazooka.
Well, that's part of his fists, man. He used his hands to create tools to destroy that Gorn. You kidding me? You can't tell me that's not valuable.
That is valuable.
He actually crushed that coal into a diamond, into a piece of quartz.
You got a stormtrooper coming at me? Well, guess what, bitch? I've got a handmade cannon.
That's right. I got a bamboo cannon.
And if that doesn't work, I'll just knock you out with him.
Captain Kirk was the MacGyver of the Star Trek universe, wasn't he?
You know what? While we're on talk of, like, hand-to-hand combat, what the fuck is up with the Star Trek universe that no one delivers a straight-up punch? They always do that, like, one hand clasping another overhead hammer chop. I mean, fucking left, like, fucking jab, jab, cross, you know, hook, uppercut. That doesn't work anymore in the future?
No, what you're not taking into account is
That's brutal, man. We've evolved from that shit.
The fists of Captain Kirk are much like the Planeteers of Captain Planet. And with their two powers combined, it forms an ultimate Captain Kirk fist.
It forms basically one Kirk fist equivalent.
Yes, one... Well,
both the two Picard fists welded together equals one of Kirk's. So it's
when Kirk puts his fist together, it forms a super punch, which you cannot withstand.
It's an automatic
Interestingly enough, this is a true fact.
It's a critical hit.
Kirk's hands joined together in such an overhead pose is, in fact, the hammer of Graptha, of Galaxy Quest fame. It's so powerful that another freaking universe has heard of it and worships it as a god.
due to the Nexus wave or whatever that was.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he was actually transported to the Galaxy Quest universe, delivered the Hammer of Grapthar, which was actually going to be called the Hammer of Kirk, but for licensing reasons, they couldn't use it.
Right. He actually, he's like, you can use the likeness, but I'm not giving you a trademark.
It's a legendary weapon.
But anyway, we can let the listeners, it's like, I will talk about Star Wars versus Star Trek till I'm blue in the face, and if a bunch of listeners come in and start talking about it, I guarantee there will be some hard, pipe-hitting, old-school brothers from the debates that will resurrect themselves from the dead and set everybody straight, so... that would be awesome. Get the whole crew back together.
Yeah, that would be fantastic. I'd love to have this debate. All right, well, I think that's just going to about do it for the show. If you have any questions or comments or you just want to chat, you can visit our forums at www.baldmove.com. Or send us an email at blueyonder@baldmove.com. Or you can reach us by phone at 1-800-EAT-A-DICK. With that said, until next time, I'm Jim Jones.
And I am Peter Street.
Hey, Ron Hubbard, ciao. What are we going to do tonight? Are we going to do Star Wars vs. Starcast or Kinder Gaming Moments?
Starcast. I've never
Star
heard
Wars
of Starcast.
Star Trek.
Star Wars vs. Starcast.
Star Wars versus shit. What's the name of that Tim Allen movie?
Tool Time?
No, the movie Galactic.
Space Quest.
No, Space Galaxy Quest, yeah. Quest, you asshole.
Star Trek versus Star.
Fucking Galaxy Quest.
Star Wars
by
versus
the Hammer of Grapthar. Right, it's Space Trek. Or Space Quest.
Galaxy Quest.
Galaxy Quest. Yeah. By the Hammer of Grapthar, I've been foiled again.
Never get fucked. Never surrender.
See, they knew what geek culture was all about.
On trucking when you're stuck at Loser Junction. You can't call it quits, don't throw in the towel. You can take a lot of licks, so never listen to the owl. Don't listen to the pundits, the haters, or the critics. So you can suck my dick, take a leap and chap a quiddick. The Chronicles of Riddick, watch the movies and the credits. I wouldn't leave the theater cause I felt like I regret it. The city was so big, and frankly, you weren't feeling right. And besides, I wanna find out who's the dolly grip on Demon Night. But then I met a friend, and he kinda showed me music. No effects in MTX, it makes me up like Rubik's. I found a path and called a rap and helped me escape. If you're rotten and forgotten, remember, there'll be better days. Never give up, never surrender. I'm gonna hit you up like they did Defender. Shame in your game, your name ain't Ender. Never give up, never surrender. Never give up, never surrender. I'm gonna hit you up like they did Defender. Shame in your game, your name ain't Ender. Never give up, never surrender.
You can never give up. You can never surrender. Fight the good fight to the end of the night and always remember. You can never give up. You can never
But I would kind of like to have a formal introduction so we can know we're officially engaged. As Patrick Stewart would say, ha ha ha.
Patrick Stewart would also say, there are four lights!
And you broke your little ship. No, that's not
him. No, but he would say, the line must be drawn here!
this far. No further. Then make them pay for what they've done.
It'd be funny if you put Yoda in Captain Picard's position for the whole series. Like, all of his famous speeches that Yoda speak.
Make them pay, I will.
I think they would actually work pretty well. I don't think you'd have to change much. Because they're essentially the same character. You give Patrick Stewart some funny ears.
They aren't even close to the same fucking character. Essentially the same character.
They are. Like, their overall principles, I think, are about the same.
Do you think Captain Picard and Yoda, Jedi Master Yoda, are the same character archetype?
Yep. Essentially the same character.
No, essentially the same character.
Yep.
That's insanity.
They're both practically bald.
Yeah, agreed. They both spout wisdom all the time.
They do spout wisdom.
There are no correlations at all.
They're both a guiding force throughout the series.
They both have to put up with impetuous teenagers.
They both pull their starships out of a swamp.
Well, yeah. Picard pulled it out of the minefield.
Yeah. Treacherous waters. Exactly the same.
So are you idiots about to cast or what?
I've been casting since a dad's born, motherfucker.
God, casting my seed around the earth.
Mm-hmm. Apparently.
Someone's just found his deep, hidden, abiding love of Star Wars come through that he's leaping to fucking Muppets defense against Star Trek. Right there, we know you now still love Star Wars.
Gotcha.
Yoda is sacred territory.
That's what I'm saying. Is there anything, there's any fucking sacred territory in Star Trek? No.
Worf's head.
It's still your daddy.
Picard's bald
head. The closest thing, honestly, that we have to sacred territory now, especially since he's made a legendary 45-year run as the character, is Spock.
7 of 9's tits. Ooh. Yeah, but he's still
Spock
not sacred.
Spock is like the Christ-like character. I mean, he's died, he's come back to life.
He's not like, he is a Christ figure.
There you go.
Oh, Kirk did that. I mean, what's the big deal? Everybody dies and comes back to life in that series.
Only if you read the freaking fiction books, where William Shatner writes himself back in.
He could Shatner himself into anything he wants. Shatner himself into your pants. He could Shatner himself into anything he wants. Shatner himself into your pants.